Welcome to Resilience Unraveled. Hi everybody and welcome to Resilience Unraveled, a podcast that examines all aspects of personal and organisational resilience. A huge all-encompassing subject that covers the ability to thrive in life by harnessing your cognitive, emotional, physiological and contextual abilities. I share stories from people who have thrived despite remarkable obstacles, as well as highly successful practitioners and experts across a range of topics. And this podcast introduces their amazing stories and expertise, as well as my own reflections, perspectives, strategies and tips, which come from my own synthesis of themes and trends from wider learning. You can go to qedod.com/extras to access offers, tools and resources, including free articles and ebooks. For those of you that would be interested in supporting our work and contributing more proactively, you can find our new Patreon page at patreon.com. Then search for Resilience Unraveled. So, let's get started. Enjoy the show. Hey, and welcome back to Resilience Unraveled. And today, my guest is Devo Tindall. Devo, that's an unusual first name. Tell me about that.
Well, I got it from my mother.
Did you? She gave it to you, or is it?
Well, it's actually a nickname. So I've had it since I was a little child. My real name is Devin, but for whatever reason, since I've been a child, I've just been called Devo, and then just sort of stuck with me. There's no real reason behind it, but I'll take it. I like it. I sort of prefer to. It's like a Brazilian soccer player, just Devo.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I'm assuming you don't use the Tindall bit, because I mean that sort of loses the mystique somewhat, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I rarely use my last name. And in fact, anybody, if you were to Google it, it just sort of pops up as Devo all over the place. So
fantastic. I love that. I think that's a really great idea. And obviously, I can tell by your accent, you're not from these shores. So I'm guessing you're from across Tuck Pond. So where in the world are you?
I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the States, originally from San Diego, California. And I moved out here in 2006. Been here ever since.
Wow. It seems odd to go from that side of the country to the other side. Most people tend to go the other way. Or maybe that's just my own limited experience.
Well, not right now. There's a mass exodus from California for whatever reason. But at the time I was married and my wife's family was all East Coast. And I went to college on the East Coast. And so she just wanted to get back to the eastern side of the States. And so I left. I just figured that was we're not married anymore. But I thought that was the loyal husband thing to do. She never liked California and she wanted to be closer to her family. So we moved east and I didn't want to move to Florida, which is where her family was at the time. So we settled somewhere in between, which was North Carolina, which turned out to be a fantastic success story for me.
Well, we were just having a chat about Florida. So I'm good decision.
Yeah, it's just never been my thing. I don't know. It's too hot. It's too buggy. It's too flat. I just, you know, it's not. It's, I guess, because I grew up in California and the water is, you know, always chill and refreshing. And then first time I went to Florida, I thought I was taking a bath when I went into the water. I'm like, what is this? This is horrible. I don't want anything to do with this. And there's just bugs everywhere and horrible drivers. It's just I just never found Florida to be very appealing to me.
Well, what are we talking about today? So tell me a bit about what it is that you do.
I own a couple of businesses. I'm a serial entrepreneur. My current biggest time investment is with Fusion Creative. We are a marketing and branding agency. We work with small businesses, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and help them craft and tell their story and then share that story with a very targeted audience so that they can have better brand exposure, obviously more revenue, but just increase their brand awareness around who they are and tell their stories. So we teach our clients how to do that properly.
You said you had a couple of websites. So have you got a side hustle as well? Is that an implication?
Yeah, no. So I've owned Fusion Photography. I did corporate gig for almost 15 years straight out of college. And then, but feeling unfulfilled in that space, I launched I've always been a photographer. So I own Fusion Photography here in Charlotte as well. And that sort of is what led me into the new business because I was creating all this content for small businesses and entrepreneurs, but then they didn't know what to do with the content. Photo, video just sort of was like sitting in their digital desk collecting dust. And so I realized there was a gap to fill with that. And so I started approaching all these clients. And I was like, what if I could take this content for you and then teach you how to do something with it? So it first started off with doing workshops and educational series and teaching them how to share their message on social media, how to tell their story. But then it turned out they're like, well, why don't you just do it for me? So I was like, okay, cool. So then I figured out a way to kind of make that into a business. And here we are 3 years later at Fusion Creative. So we take the content. So it's a sort of a holistic approach. We take the content, we teach them how to use it so they're on board with it. And then we take that content and manage it for them. So social media, website design, paid advertising, all the different things that go into that digital space.
Yeah, it's always struck me as interesting. Obviously, we talk about resilience here, but before we get into that, it's always struck me as interesting this idea of narrative, because in terms of personal psychology, narrative is so important. But it's also that thing in the gap in perception between what a business is its narrative and its story and its brand and the actuality of it, and I often wonder whether people create stories to actually aspire to it and change their business purpose to meet their own narrative. Or there's a gap between, that sort of glitzy front end and the true horror of what might sit behind it sometimes.
That's a really interesting observation, and I love that space. And I think from my perspective, that inherently that is actually the crux of the problem, is that businesses are trying to tell a story that is not authentic to what they truly are. And because of that, they're not actually clear on what their true value proposition is. And so they try to be like everyone else, or they see something on social media, and so they try to espouse to that instead of really focusing and honing in on what their true strengths are, what their superpowers are, and then telling that story. Because think about it, if you really know what you're good at and you've really taken the time to clearly define, you'll be able to better articulate that because you have the passion and the emotion behind it. And other people will see that. And because we're so smart as consumers, we have so much information now at our disposal, right? With these phones, I can very quickly get to the bottom of reading reviews. I can see what other people think about it. And I can really clearly understand whether you actually are solving a problem for me. And if you're not truly solving a problem, whether it's conscious or subconscious, I'm going to move on to the next thumb slide. And so that inherently is the problem that I try to solve for my clients. So thank you for that astute observation.
No, that's okay. It's checks in the post, I think, as they say. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because actually, there's sometimes a fantasy between the narrative and your authentic self as well. I mean, this applies to individual psychology as well as business psychology, because often you work out your true superpowers and all these different things, and actually don't really like what you're saying, because actually isn't funky or sexy or aspirational or where you want to be. It's actually sometimes your superpower roots you in your past. And that's one of the risks of the superpower approach, I always think, because it is inherently old-fashioned because it was where you were.
That's a really good observation. So, can you have some self-awareness around where you were and understand the context of what's been created because of that? Then, if you want to go psychologically, do the shadow work to sort of work with that. What does that actually mean? Like, who are you in a sense? Like, how often do we ask ourselves who we really are and what it is that we're here to accomplish? Like, why did we come here and why did you create this business? And so that's your business shadow work, if you will, to speak, psychologically. So, in a sense, we do that shadow work with our clients. So there's part science to it, there's part data to it, there's part true psychology, intuitive psychology that really gets to the root of the problem, what it is they truly want to accomplish. Because what I find a lot of times is what you just said, we think we want to do this, we think we're good at this, but when we really sink down in beneath the covers, we realize that they may not be very clear on what they're actually trying to, their problem is they're solving. And so then we help them create that so they can actually step into their true power. So you're right. There is a difference between our perceived notion and what our actual abilities are.
And it is interesting as well, isn't it? You look at the fundamentals of sort of basic strategy, and you talk about this area that you either have, and very boldly, you have big growth, small growth, steady state, retrenchment, or exit, at the simplest thing. And you often find that people make those sort of seismic shifts when there's been a problem. So, it's resilience that comes in, business resilience. You have to do a turnaround, you have to shake things out, you have to sort of reinvent who you are, you have to pivot, you have to switch, because actually there's an emergency. And sometimes it's much more cathartic to do that than trying to be reinventing yourself when you're already good at something. It takes a lot of bravery to reinvent yourself when you're already successful, because you've got so much more to lose. And I always wonder, actually, sometimes resilience is the easy way around corporate reinvention in a way.
Well, even if you do have success, I think that I personally believe, this is just my personal philosophy, that our job is to become a better version of ourselves each and every day in every way possible. And that doesn't mean that you're trying to seek perfection. That just means that there's always a higher ceiling. But if you're stuck in the paradigm of I'm really successful and I've sort of reached this space, I have all the things I need, but you're not taking into account like the potential that you haven't yet considered, then you're sort of limiting yourself. So if you have reached a pinnacle and you do have a lot of success, what else is there out there that you might not have explored yet because you just haven't taken the time to do that? And so for me, it's, I guess my answer to that is, you know, I lived and breathed in a corporate world straight out of college, and I made a lot of money, you know, had a big house. I had all the things, all the metrics that would qualify as success, but inherently in my soul, I wasn't happy. I felt unfulfilled. I felt like, and I didn't even know what it was. You know, I'd made a lot of mistakes, and looking back, which I don't believe in mistakes, but I had a lot of experiences along the way that created that paradigm I was operating in. And on the cover, it's like, wow, you know, this guy has everything. But if you were to sit and actually have a deep conversation with myself and realize, like, yeah, I have a lot of things, but what does that mean? What I'm not doing anything that's making me happy. I wake up in the morning and I drudge going to work. I'm like drudging through the day. So by having that conversation with yourself and doing your shadow work and being self-aware and taking the time to be introspective around it, I realized that, you know, ultimately I didn't want to be in corporate world. Making thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars wasn't necessarily my primary objective. I actually wanted to be in a position where I could help other people and serve them in a capacity. And so that's what I felt like was my true calling. And so I stepped into that space and walked away from something else.
I'm hearing all the American buzzwords all flooding out of that one last sentence. So calling and serving others and such like. It is interesting, this sort of move away, even away from that idea. And I was listening to the CEO of Timpsons, which is a big company, a relatively big company in this area. And what they've done is they've thrown all their performance metrics out, and they've thrown all of the metrics out of the window at the moment. And what they're saying is basically that there are three rules of business. Any money you take has to go on the tail, effectively. And there was a couple of tiny others, but fundamentally, all they want is people to be happy. And what they've discovered is that their metrics have all ticked up because of the focus on happiness. And it is interesting that this drive, this your best self, you're maximizing your potential, can sometimes just make people quite miserable. And actually, a lot of people just want to come to work and jog along. And I know it's not the American dream, but it's an interesting idea, isn't it, that we subvert the idea of what is happiness.
I don't think happiness is something that I'm seeking now. So I understand your perspective and I don't disagree with it. But happiness is not my ultimate objective. I think peace is sort of my ultimate objective, and being able to be present and mindful in situations, if you want to borrow some more buzzwords, but just be present and mindful in all situations. I have two daughters, and you know, one of the things I noticed is that I was missing most of their life. I was working all the time, and I was running around, and I was gone on weekends, and I was traveling, and I was like, man, my daughter's 7 years old, and I have not yet seen one of her dance performances. My other daughter is 5 years old, and I have yet to be to one of her gymnastics events. And I was like, that's not the definition of happiness per se. That's the definition of, and it's different for everybody. For me, it was, how can I find an existence that enables me to sort of be peaceful with what's going on and not like constantly looking over my shoulder, or do I have to do this, or I have to do that, or do I have to create this, or do I have to make more money? And what I found is that my quote unquote happiness was being able to spend time with the people that I love, doing the things that I love doing most, which is reading, sitting on a beach like you are right now, or exploring different things with, you know, whatever it is. And so I found that my existence that I was living was not enabling me to do those things. And so I truthfully, my soul wasn't happy. My health wasn't good. I was suffering from in my relationship with my wife, which led to divorce. And at first I thought, okay, this is everyone else's fault. You know, I'm good. I'm great. I'm doing this. Look at me. I'm the youngest executive in a Fortune 500 company, like all these sorts of things. And what it turned out was, is that I wasn't good. Those were all a facade. I was like playing make believe with something else. And so my version of happy, or my version of being present and mindful, was like, there's a different paradigm for me to step into. And so those metrics changed for me. It wasn't like make money. It was, how can I spend more time with my kids? Or how can I just sit and read a whole book cover to cover without having to like race over to work or race off to a trip or do something like that? So I guess that's what I'm trying to explain to it.
I think that's really profound, actually, because I love the peace analogy. I think that's really lovely. I'm a big believer in words, and I think I love words. Mine's freedom, yours is peace. Look, some people have happiness, it doesn't really matter as long as people have it. But what I find is that certainly from and I think often the corporate world and entrepreneurial world is similar to the individual psychology, where people's identity becomes rooted in work, and so work becomes them. And there's a lot of research that shows that when people of a certain generation get to a certain age, they retire and they die pretty quickly because their sense of identity has been the work itself. Because and you know, I bump into entrepreneurs on a regular basis who tell me how much they hate work in their own company. And it's like obvious, well, why don't you change? Because it is your company, it could be anything you want. Well, I can't, because I'm now trapped into this treadmill of identity based on this is what an entrepreneur should be like. And I know myself, in terms of when I redefined myself and thought about freedom, I really did recategorize actually how do I get freedom. And it's about doing what you want, doing what's fun, doing what's lucrative, or doing what you find intellectually challenging. And I think you have to go through that piece of work. And I think you're calling it shadow work, and I like that idea. But I don't think we actually sit down and maybe it's a wisdom thing. Maybe it's an age thing. I'm a bit older than you, so maybe I've done this more than once. But this idea of freeing our identity from the means of producing it. So you have to be something before you can generate the means of delivering that. And I think people mix that up. They confuse it, don't they?
I think that's a brilliant observation. Well, we're not taught that. So if you sort of, at least here in America, I don't have any experience in England, but I would imagine most of the Western world is very similar in that space, because I've traveled, you know, all over the planet, and you see different things in different cultures, right? And so, you know, what matters to us is completely different than what matters to people in the Middle East, for example. So one of the things that I've observed now that I have children that are in the schooling system is that we're militarily, and I'm using that term metaphorically, but somewhat literally, we're metaphorically, militarily taught to sort of sit in these rows. And within these rows, we're taught that the only way to have success or to be excellent is to have better grades than everyone else, belong to the sports team, have the best band, have the best team, have the best grades, have the highest GPA, be the Rhodes Scholar, get the college scholarship. I saw that college admission in America is at an all-time high. It's like 600% higher than it's ever been in any time in recorded history. And because my daughter's going through it right now, and like the admission standards are, and they're creating this like scarcity model, right?
Yeah.
So that, but also simultaneous to the scarcity model, tuition has gone up like 200%. It's like $60,000 to go to school in America now at a real college. It's insane. And so it's like, we get caught up in that trap of, I have to be the best in my class so that I could get to this school, because this school is the best school. And then when I get to this best school, I'm going to get the best job. And when I get this best job, I'm going to be the best person I could possibly be. And so we're taught from day one. We talked about epigenetics in the green room before the call. It's like we're literally cellularly trained to follow one path. And it's really just dogmatic, because there's so many other things that exist on the planet where you could like find and make a living. Like, and you might not make all that money, but would you make something else in currency that makes you happy, that makes you peaceful, that makes you have freedom? And so, but we're not taught those things. And so maybe it is wisdom. Maybe it is an accumulation of trial and error. Like maybe it's all of the above. But for me, it was everything you just said. Like I had to go through this school of failures. I got divorced. I had a bunch of other things going on that just didn't really amount to what I thought I wanted my life to be. But then when I stopped and looked at it, I was like, what I thought I wanted my life to be was based upon another principle of someone else's idea of success. It wasn't what I wanted to be. Yeah. It wasn't what I ultimately wanted. And I didn't have the peace. And so I don't think a lot of people go through that exercise. And that doesn't make me better or worse. I'm just saying, I don't think everybody goes through that state of, let's call it renaissance, where you're introspectively looking at your life and saying, is this really what I want to do? Is this really what I expected my life to look like? And we just sort of get caught on this treadmill. And because they keep feeding us the nuggets of showing us what success looks like and rewarding us, it's like Pavlov's dog. It's like the dangling carrot in front of you. You just keep, oh, give me more, give me more, give me more. And it just like becomes this self-deprecating machine that we can't get off of. And by the time you do get off of it, it's like you're 65 years old or 55 years old. You're like, holy shit, like I didn't accomplish any of the stuff I thought I was going to do when I was a little boy or a little girl. And it's like, Fuck, man, I only have 15, 20 years left in my life. Now what? And so, like, that's the problem. The paradigm that is training us needs to be reconstructed.
Yes, I love what you're saying there. And of course, sometimes you end up just agreeing with each other on these podcasts. So let me pull this apart a little bit. So I love what you've said there. I mean, you're talking about capitalism.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that's what a capitalism needs, a sort of a blindly faithful audience to be fed itself into the sausage machine to do what it
100%.
wants. But what's fascinating about this system, two things about your system and ours. One, which is that the only way to prove you're the best is to be able to measure things. And so what happens is schools measure things they can measure instead of things that they should be measuring. So they don't measure completeness, robustness, thinking skills, adaptability, resilience, emotional intelligence. What they're measuring is, can you hit a test? So the schools teach the tests, and everybody knows that, which means you've got vast armies of people coming out into the world with no useful skills, really, because we're teaching the skills that were to the test, which we could measure, 25 years ago, which were relevant then. And then don't get me started on IQ, which is one of the most ridiculous measures of all time. And if you look at the history
Thank
of
you.
IQ, it's the most bizarre thing you've ever come across. And so what we've got with this best of the best of the best model is that the resilience which is built in is very fragile, because actually the vast majority of people who are coming through that sort of education system are not the best, because the best is the apex and everybody else is a failure. And this is why we have so much anxiety in the world. You see these amazingly increasing levels of anxiety. And now we've got all this neurodiverse thinking styles and such like, because in that really rigid system that you're talking about, neurodiversity shows up as being odd. I'm doing parenthesis fingers now here, because it's not odd, it's just different. And we've just discovered that difference is wrong. And instead of realizing that difference is the future. Difference is creativity, isn't it? I mean, doing what you do, part of what you must be doing is going in, looking at a situation, looking at it with a different perspective, a different set of eyes, a different set of thinking processes, and going, hey, have you thought about it? And
100%.
that person sitting there going, blimey, I didn't. How did you come up with that? And you're thinking, this literally isn't rocket science. This is literally just perspective.
100%. And for whatever reason, I've always been blessed with that sort of left brain, right brain, pragmatic creativity mindset. And even when I worked in the corporate world, I would get in, it's one of the reasons I walked away from the corporate world, because I would get in trouble for questioning things and operationally looking at something. And I'm like, I literally had a boss pull me into his office once. And he's like, I think your idea is genius. Like, it would really improve the processes. We'd ultimately make more money, but we can't do that right now. And I was like, what do you? He's like, well, first of all, you're just new to the company and you're like 25 years old. So you need to know your place. He literally told me I need to know my
Know your
place.
place. Yeah.
I can't just speak up. And I wasn't speaking up to show off. I was just sitting in the room, and my mode of thinking is, okay, that's good, but we could do it this way. Have you considered that? Or have you considered this? Or have you thought about this? Or here's the ramifications of that. And maybe if we tried this, we might go that direction. So my mind's always thinking, like, what's a different way to approach something to give a equal or better outcome with, path of least resistance? And so I had stepped out of my place. And what's crazy to me is that the more I stepped out of my place, the more I was told that I can't do that. And so that's sort of what led me down that pathway of, like, do I really want to be in this place where I'm constantly bumping up against this reversion to critical thinking, this like aversion to like having a better way of doing things just because you've always done it that way? And so that's ultimately why I stepped away from it. But to your point, which, by the way, you have some brilliant points. If you should really write a book on this piece, by the way. But now we have this, and we look at this all day long, and we have this comparisonitis of everyone else's idea of what success is, or you see someone else doing this and you're like, why can't I do this? And so we start like getting caught up in this, like, I don't even know what it is. It's this like perpetual will of, they're doing it, why can't I? But they're doing it better than me, so maybe I'm not good enough. So I have to sort of have those like inherent feelings of failure within myself. So, like, we're at an all-time high in depression in America. I don't know about you are in the UK, but
Yeah,
like
same.
suicide rates, all-time high, depression, all-time high. People moving jobs. I saw that the average person jumps jobs before they turn 30 15 times in America. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but for me, when I read that, I see is like there's two ways to interpret that. You either have people who are following this new model of like, I can do whatever I want, or they're following this model of, impossible to please because I have perpetual gratification handed to me on a daily basis. And the whole idea of toiling and figuring things out on your own and playing in the mud and being in the trenches and failing doesn't exist so much anymore because we can just quickly like move on to the next thing. So I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's just sort of an observation I've been thinking about
No,
a
I think
lot.
I love that thought. And as you're talking, it's sort of it's making me wonder whether, you know, you look at yourself and the changes you've done and the work you've made on yourself and your dark side and such like. And but we need all those dull sort of automatons in large organizations because they're the ones that hire us because A, they can't do it, we can. But if they could do it, they wouldn't need us. So, and it may well be that we've created a system where the mavericks, the fly-by-nights, the creatives, the innovators, they need to be let free. Because it is also the case, isn't it? And I'm sure you've seen this happen a ton of times in America where a quite, you know, a significant creative factory or enterprise has been swallowed up by a large organization. Within 6 months, all the creativity is gone and all the people have left. Because actually, the two things, it is hard to coalesce. So maybe there's a natural falling out if you're going through work and you're asking questions and people are saying no. Maybe is the falling out to say, maybe what is the career path for people that don't conform to the sort of ideological stereotype of keep your nose clean. If you say the wrong thing, it's a career limiting mistake. But otherwise, here's a massive budget and go and hire people who can do what you can't. Don't know.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Have you ever heard of the Book of Ra?
Yes,
So
yes.
I've been reading the Book of Ra lately, and one of the things they talk about is sort of like there's this coalescence of people that evolve, and there's a group of people that just aren't equipped to evolve, and there's a group of people who just haven't figured out how to evolve yet. And so there's only a limited number of people who can evolve into that space, and then the rest just sort of rinse and repeat and start all over again. So it's interesting to think of that in that way, which is similar to what you just said, like there's a pathway for the mavericks and there's a pathway for the automatons. And it is true, like the nature of our society and the economy and capitalism and all the currency of money and stuff, we have to, it couldn't exist if there wasn't the automatons, and it couldn't exist if there wasn't the mavericks. So then I stopped to think, and I'm like, okay, is that the yin and yang of that specific model? Like, you have to have one, you can't have one without the other. So maybe that is the universal law. But then I also stop and think, like, well, what if you could create an entire society of mavericks, of free thinkers, of critical thinkers? So what are we leaving on the table? What haven't we tapped into yet, right? So if we could train people to become the mavericks, if we could teach people to tap into their creative and their critical thinking and all the things that make society a cohesive whole, ultimately, what are we leaving on? What could we potentially become? Like, could we evolve into something simply magnificent that we haven't even yet considered yet? And are we intentionally being repressed so that society can't do that? Because in order for a society to exist the way that it is, there has to be a dominion of control. There always has to be the doers and the not doers, right? So somebody is sitting at the top controlling all of this paradigm because it benefits them. So it's like, yeah, I'm not trying to be a weirdo MAGA conspiracy theorist, but you do have to start of it does beg the question, like, is there a reason that not everybody has become creative critical thinkers? Is that universal law or is it by design? I don't know. Maybe that you have to have one. You have to have that coexistence of the yin and the yang. I don't know. It's just a thought I think about sometimes.
We're now into philosophy, and I think that's great, isn't it? We've now gone from talking about marketing, we're now into philosophy. And but let's just play with that a little bit longer because if you have any market, let's say we had a market that's 100% of creatives, and there's no people to get the job done because we're all busy having ideas. Every market regresses towards the mean. So actually, you'd end up with the market of innovators being poor innovators, average innovators, really good innovators, and exceptional innovators. So you'd end up with the same problem.
With the same
And
model.
it's the same model. You'd always have that. And maybe that's just a socioeconomic model rather than no, that goes back to capitalism. So but if you go back to what's it called when you call about the progression of the human race? Oh, not archaeology, but you know what I mean, social archaeology. Human beings tend to have that pattern in their lives, don't they? Tribes have it. You know, all sorts of cultures have that sort of pattern. They have castes, and they have high and lows, and they have all these different sectors and such like. And of course, what we end up doing is you'll bump into people who are more creative than you and less creative than you.
all the time.
And it's that bit about going back to your sense of identity. If what you do serves your sense of identity to give you some sort of peace, that is a sort of fulfillment. And whether it's religious or spiritual or just financial or whatever it might be, just intellectually curiously satisfying, that's the sort of state you're looking for, isn't it? It's where all of those, going back to your idea of, working out this narrative, it's about how do you pull those knots together to so you actually are secure in that sense of narrative and who you are that sits behind it.
I fully believe and agree to that. I think that humans by design and universe by design, there are more flaws and less flaws, more perfections, less perfections. And I know I have a neighbor that has been a mailman for, he is 62 years old now. He's been delivering mail since he was 19 years old. That's all he does. But he has his weekends off. He likes to go to the beach. He likes to surf. He's like a he's a perpetual kid in a sense. Like he's never actually grown up outside of it, but he is perfectly happy. That is his life. That's all he cares about. And if you try to have a conversation with him about anything else, he's just sort of like, I don't have an interest in that. So that might be just the way that it is. There are some people who I'm not that way. Like I'm always looking for like, how can I make this a little bit cleaner? How can I make this a little bit better? How can I make this process a little more improved? That's what drives me. I like whittling with things and seeing improvements or seeing the reactions to stuff. Like I just love exploring and exploring things. And so that's me. That doesn't make me better or worse than you. It just makes me me. And maybe that's the beauty of it all, is that we have this diversity of population, and that's what makes it all tick. And so for me, at the center of that is still creativity, whether it's a one on a Richter scale of 1 to 10 of creativity, it's still creativity. And so like that should always be pursued in people. That's just I think that's just the nature of the beast.
Unless, of course, that your maxim is not to be creative, is to be predictable, reliable, and just you chug away. I was thinking, if you talk about the mailman, I was thinking to myself, everybody needs to have the mail delivered, and I suddenly thought, ah, but the trouble is, creatives like us develop a way of not needing the mail to be delivered. So what you'll find is, if you band your identity on the job and your job goes down the toilet, you are, I was going to say flushed away, but there's too many mixed metaphors now. And look, we've jabbered on enough, and we talked all sorts of things. And if you've not proved you're creative, you've done nothing else, because that's brilliant, everything you've been talking about today. So if people want to engage with your narrative, storytelling, content, work, and such like, how can they find out more about what you do, Devo?
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation as well. But I had one final thought on that. So for me, creativity, I think it can be somewhat mundane because it really boils down to the ability to transcend a traditional idea, maybe a rule or maybe a pattern or a like of your own choosing, which there's a lot of subjectivity to that, and to create some sort of meaningful purpose for you around that. And so if delivering mail for 61 years or 40, 58 years is your idea of creating meaning or something meaningful for you, that's still being creative in some way, shape, or form. So that's all I meant by that. But anyway, sorry to digress.
Literally creating.
That's the
Because
origin of the word.
people do not understand, people misunderstand this idea that creativity is about having a world-shattering idea that changes the world. But what you're saying is, actually, creativity is literally creating something.
It's creating your version, whatever that may be, as diverse as it can be from the strain of people all over the planet. It's just creating something that makes sense to you and provides a sense of meaning and purpose for you. Like that's really all I see at creativity at the end of the day is. And it doesn't mean you need to compose the next Mozart or the next piece of brilliant art. It just means, are you doing something that is contributing, adding some value, solving a problem, and gives you meaning and purpose? And if so, then go rock on, brother. Go rock on.
So it's actually creating creativity.
There
Creativity.
you go. I like that.
You've got a new word now. Right,
We're gonna co-write a book.
come on, you have
We're
to do
gonna
your
co-write a book on this.
yeah, you're gonna have to come up with your how can people get in touch with you?
All right, sorry. You can find me online at Fusion Creative Branding. That's Fusion with an S, not a Z, as some Americans obviously think. I don't understand that, by the way. But FusionCreativeBranding.com, or you can find me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Fusion Photog. Fusion, short for photography, Fusion Photog. So.
Very good. It's been a delight today, and I've enjoyed it. And apologies if I've taken far too much of your time, but I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
No.
So all the very best with everything you're doing. And just one more time, that's fusioncreativebranding.com. And you talked about LinkedIn social, and I'm sure we'll link up on LinkedIn as well. So that'd be good.
Thank you for the conversation. It's refreshing to have conversations of this nature.
And you. Take care. All the best. Hi, everybody. I hope you found that episode useful and interesting. Feedback is always welcomed, and if you're in the mood to subscribe to us or even leave a comment on iTunes or Stitcher, that would be amazing. If you want to suggest ideas or even people you would like me to interview, then reach out to us at qedod.com/contact. As I said earlier, you can go to qedod.com/podcast for show notes or follow the links. And you can go to qedod.com/extras to access offers, tools and resources, including free articles and ebooks. For those of you that would be interested in supporting our work and contributing more proactively, you can find our new Patreon page at patreon.com, then search for Resilience Unraveled. I look forward to being in your ear next time around. Take care.